What is the best entrepreneurial decision-making approach during an exogenous shock like the coronavirus panic? We take a look at smart, knowledge-based, and imaginative actions with the help of Per Bylund.
This is the Economics for Entrepreneurs podcast, a project of the Mises Institute, applying the principles of economics to start, grow, and manage your business. For free tools, resources, key takeaways, and actionable insights from each episode, visit Mises.org/E4EPod. Now, here's Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. We're at the beginning of the economic shock resulting from the coronavirus scare. Whatever you think about the justification or otherwise of the restrictions on economic activity that are being mandated, it's impossible to disregard the reality of them. These are testing times for many entrepreneurs because expectations are not being met. The anticipated future is not the same as it was just a few days ago. If we look at the situation through the lens of Austrian entrepreneurship, we embrace the change. We look for opportunity. We look for advantage. We look for the chance to demonstrate the imaginative agility and adaptiveness that characterizes the entrepreneurial function. That might sound a bit daunting when markets are contracting, travel is restricted, and there are limitations imposed, either self-imposed or otherwise, on social exchange. But the great entrepreneurs find opportunity to strengthen their supply chains, enhance their customer relationships, establish new and better ways to serve, and to imagine a better future. I ran into a lawyer friend of mine whose business has taken a short-term blow because jury trials are on hiatus, it being too difficult to assemble a jury pool at the moment. His reaction? It's going to be a great second half of the year. He's already making his contingency plans to manage the bulge that is the inevitable corollary of the current freeze. That's the positive mindset of the entrepreneur. It's thinking about the ecosystem in which you are operating, in this case, the jury trial ecosystem, and more broadly, the legal system, and thinking about the future consequences of current changes in the system and adapting your business for advantage. You can't always control your circumstances. In fact, you never control the system in which you operate. You fit in and you contribute. Fitting in means adapting to change and to others. Contributing means identifying your advantage in serving others, an advantage that's built on listening to them, understanding them, and serving their needs, wherever in the ecosystem they are located, upstream from you, downstream from you, or laterally from you. There's no one better to help us with entrepreneurial systems thinking than Per Bylund. Per is Assistant Professor of Entrepreneurship and Records Johnson Professor of Free Enterprise in the School of Entrepreneurship at Oklahoma State University. He is also a frequent contributor to Mises Wire at Mises.org and to Entrepreneur.com, which is where we will start our journey today. Per, welcome back to the Economics for Entrepreneurs podcast.
Hi, Hunter. Thank you so much for having me on again.
We're recording this in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, and specifically, you've very quickly jumped to help entrepreneurs with an article in entrepreneur.com that was very, very well received about what approach can be taken in the midst of what economists might call an exogenous shock to the business. The epidemic and the panic have been dubbed both a supply shock and a demand shock. So we're going to try today to see if we can draw some specific conclusions that are helpful for entrepreneurs about how to deal with this kind of a situation. And as I read your article, which we've posted to Mises for Business Showcase page on LinkedIn, if anybody wants to read it, you say, I think, I'm maybe putting words in your mouth here, think as an entrepreneur inside the system, be a systems thinker and examine the ecosystem around you. Is that a fair kind of generalization?
Yes, absolutely. Usually when we start and run businesses, first we identify where the business fits in the system overall, and especially as we have talked about before with respect to consumer value and so forth. But we usually can just count on suppliers being there and offering our inputs and perhaps even a market for distribution and also a way of communicating directly with consumers and so forth. So this makes the sort of the entrepreneurial problem a whole lot easier. But with these exogenous shocks, when something completely changes the landscape, so to speak, it makes sense to take a step back and look at where does my business actually fit overall in the economy or in the market, and not just simply what products am I producing, but what is it I'm doing and where does what I'm doing fit in the overall system and how does that contribute to consumers? And then from there, identify who are the main players, the main stakeholders that you are, in fact, even though you might not realize it explicitly, collaborating with and cooperating with, because you are producing your outputs using the inputs from your supplier. And that's a collaboration with the supplier that they provide you with whatever you need at a certain point in time or a certain frequency and so forth, and that you can rely on their quality and their deliverables and so forth. Now, this is not so certain, meaning you should probably start communicating with them and making sure to, in a sense, safeguard the production process or the whole supply chain, not just your own business.
Yeah, so we approach this in a collaborative standpoint, which I think is a good thing to remember. And then based on the structure of your article, you say approach it in a logical fashion. And the first place to look is upstream, i.e. to your suppliers and the supply end of your supply chain, and to reach out and communicate them. Expand a little bit on that exploration and that conversation. What are entrepreneurs doing at this point?
Well, what they are doing is not something I know much about, but what they should be doing is to probably pick up the phone and talk to their suppliers and figure out the supplier's situation. They are probably in half panic mode like everybody else, meaning they are trying to figure out what to do and what to do first and how to prioritize and how to satisfy their customers, which is you, the entrepreneur, and how to do that in the best way possible and not to hurt their customers. How do they ship to just some customers? Do they ship only half orders? How do they secure that they ship at a certain frequency, whatever it is that they're doing? And they do not know exactly how your business might be affected by whatever decisions they're making. Meaning, if you pick up the phone and call them and talk to them and ask them, okay, what is your situation like? What can I expect from you from now on? Using different scenarios, perhaps, maybe one worst case where all borders are shut down and whatnot else, and then some lighter scenarios, maybe one where this whole crisis blows over in a couple of weeks. How are you going to deal with that and so forth? But talking to them and see what is their situation like, what do they expect will happen, and how can you help them serve you as much as possible? I mean, it goes back to what we have talked about before in several of these podcast episodes, that your job is to serve consumers. Well, your supplier's job is to serve you. And that really goes both ways, especially when something is changing this rapidly and it's not your doing. That you need to get together and cooperate and figure out what is the best way forward, so that you can help them solve their problem, and their problem is to help you. So you help yourself by helping them.
Well, that's good advice. I think we've covered then three elements of the ecosystem: collaboration, which you emphasize. So we're collaboratively in this together with our suppliers. Communication. So communication builds trust. It expands knowledge, but also contingency planning. That under uncertainty, you've got to think about the range of things that could happen and plan for all of them. So you talked about worst case and medium case and best case. So entrepreneurs have to be good at contingency planning.
Indeed. That's how, as we say, entrepreneurs bear uncertainty. That's having different scenarios in mind and figuring out which one is more likely and how to behave should one of those scenarios actually be the case. And in this case, when things are changing so rapidly and changing so much, what matters is to get together with the others in the whole process to figure out what are the actual scenarios that you together can expect, and how do you react with respect to them? What do you do if something happens? And I think it's a good way to have three scenarios: one that is really bad, one that is comparatively speaking a very good one, and one that is more likely. And I mean, how do you figure out which scenario is most likely? Well, I mean, it's your judgment. You know the industry, you know the your business, you know the market, and your supplier knows the same thing for whatever is upstream of your production. And you just have to use what you know and what you understand.
Yeah. One tough situation might be that you're locked into a single supplier. We've got some hints that Apple is in that situation with its Chinese outsourcing partners in some parts of his business. And it might not be easy to get out of that in the short term, but it tells you in a more general sense that you should always have backups. You should always have alternatives. You should have thought of that contingency in advance. It may be tough to face it today, but it makes you better at contingency planning in the future.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's better to be late than to not do anything at all. So I think in this very competitive market that we have, many entrepreneurs, they have one supplier and maybe they have locked in a supply contract for a year or two so that they're sort of safe. Well, if something happens to that supplier, you should have a contingency plan. But even if you do not, you should have some kind of idea of what other businesses in what other locations might be able to help you with the same or similar things. And even if your supplier says that there's nothing wrong right now, we can still honor the contract, we can deliver as scheduled, you should probably reach out to a couple of other ones and ask them what their situation is like, which will give you some insight into your own supplier's situation, but it will also create those relationships that you might need to use further down the road.
Yeah. The other thing that comes to mind, Per, is that there's always technology to come to the help of the entrepreneur, especially in 2020. And I was going to draw the parallel between your business. You're not teaching in the classroom at this point in time, but you can teach online. And that's a new opportunity that technology has made available. And today there are software and AI algorithms that are presented at least as self-correcting supply chains or self-reconfiguring supply chains, or another term that's used is supply chain visibility software. And I think we mentioned one recent conversation, Zilingo, which is an app in the fashion industry that links designers to factories skills that are available in different parts of the world, and also can link to financing and other kinds of technology. So maybe technology is another area that entrepreneurs can get assistance today.
Oh, absolutely. And the technology has really one function, and that is to help us overcome obstacles and solve problems and so forth. I think in this case, many of these technologies are developed as basically matchmakers. And matchmaking sort of relies on those promises being made that they can deliver. So I'm not sure to what extent they are a complete out at present. And I'm not sure how much you would still need your judgment and maybe pick up the phone and so forth. Because if someone fails upstream from you, then you are in trouble. technology should definitely be used to the extent that it can help you. That's a no-brainer, I think. But it certainly doesn't help with using your own judgment and being a little hands-on.
We are talking with Per Bylund about Austrian entrepreneurs' adaptiveness to the shock caused by the coronavirus panic. In our Austrian Entrepreneurs Journey online course, we don't have special tactics for this unanticipated event, but we do have solid, always applicable advice and high-value techniques for listening to customers and suppliers and translating the results into impactful action, including tools and templates to help you. Sign up now at e4epod.com/journey. e4epod.com/journey. And now back to Dr. Bylund. Yeah, the other area of entrepreneurial expertise that makes me think about too is knowledge. It seems like such a bland term, but when you identify knowledge as knowing who the alternative suppliers might be and knowing how to make a switch and knowing the right piece of software that might help you and those kinds of knowledge, we can start to think about unique knowledge that each entrepreneur has and a knowledge advantage. And again, this might be an opportunity to build up a knowledge advantage.
Well, absolutely. And in a sense, I mean, those who have lesser knowledge and lesser judgment and are not as good at what they're doing, they might have some serious problems in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that knowledge advantage, you should try to get one. I mean, that's one way of putting it, I suppose. But you should also not think that this type of knowledge is about statistics or knowing facts and so forth, because many of these of the facts available, they are on the internet. So in a sense, the schools are doing exactly the wrong thing, teaching students facts and memorizing facts, whereas those are available everywhere, which of course is the case for entrepreneurs too. What you need to know is figure out which facts matter. And which pieces of knowledge are important for your business and that you can take advantage of that maybe is not communicable. So maybe you cannot actually tell others about this knowledge, but you have a feeling, a gut feeling, or maybe it's just something that you know. I mean, we refer to this as tacit knowledge, the type of knowledge where you know how it is, but you can't really tell people why or how. And entrepreneurs have this with their own business, but it's not really measurable. So it's sort of hidden from us doing research on entrepreneurs. And it can be hidden from entrepreneurs too if they focus too much on specific details and figures instead of going with their gut feeling and their judgment.
Yeah, and that's always the opportunity for the entrepreneur. So let's flip our vision now. Per, you've talked about looking upstream. We'll turn around the perspective and look downstream. And in your entrepreneur.com article, you use the term assistance, assisting your customers, which I guess fits into our general advice of getting closer to customers, understanding their needs, trying to facilitate value for them. Talk to us about how we can do that under these circumstances.
Right. So when we talked about just a minute ago that you should call your suppliers and thereby safeguard your own business and make sure that you get the supplies, the same goes for your customers. But you shouldn't wait for them to call you, but you, in your role as entrepreneur, whether you're selling to consumers or other businesses, your job is to serve them and facilitate whatever it is that they value. And it might well have changed now. With the crisis, maybe their behavior has changed, maybe their plans have changed, whatever it is. But it's your job to serve them, and that's how you serve yourself. And this is something we've talked about a number of times on this podcast. So I'm sort of rehashing it in the article, saying that after you've called your suppliers and you know your situation and what you can do, you should definitely call your consumers and your customers as well and talk to them. How can you be of assistance at this time? If it's a business that you're selling to, then talk about how you can support them in their production efforts, what types of materials they or outputs that you're producing will they need at what frequencies, which ones might they not need as urgently and then you can perhaps offer those to someone else. How are they changing their business, and how can you help them do that? I mean, it could go, could be anything from offering them financing or offering them a plan for deliveries. And you can't know. I mean, it's the same as with your supplier. Can't know your situation. You can't know their situation. So you need to reach out and figure out what would benefit them the most. Is it one more 100% delivery and then nothing? Or is it 25% for several deliveries to come? Or is it just a certain portion of what you're producing for them, but not the rest? Well, what is it that would serve them the most? And there are many, many different things you can do. But the problem, of course, as an entrepreneur, is that you need to make sure that your cash flow is okay. So you offer them anything you can and assist them in any way you can, but not in such a way that it undermines your cash flow, because that could mean that you go bankrupt and that doesn't serve your customers at all.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot in the past, that cash flow is the critical lifeblood, obviously, of the business. But one of the things that entrepreneurs can do is monitor that with greater rigor, perhaps, in the current situation, both upstream, the payments to suppliers and so on, and downstream, the revenues you're going to get from your own customers. So is it just a matter of increased rigor, or is it adding to your cash cushion with terms from your suppliers that you can re-extend to your customers? How might they think about that?
Well, both. I mean, it depends on the situation. Some businesses might not actually have much of a problem with this, whereas other businesses might need a whole lot of cash in the weeks to come. So it you need to use your judgment as an entrepreneur to figure this out. But definitely, I mean, in a sense, production goes downstream, but payments go upstream. So in that sense, you are in between your suppliers and your customers. And whatever your supplier can give you in terms of leeway or additional time to pay the bills, if you can extend that to your customers, that will make their lives easier, and that will probably help them to stay alive longer and whatnot else, which means that you thereby can continue your business. So anything that you can do in Cinco, and I would say that in terms of crisis like this, you should probably think a little bit outside the box and offer them more than and different things than you usually would have, because there might not be other options available. So maybe they have other suppliers, or their customers will not be able to offer them credit whatsoever. So maybe then you will act as the short-term creditor for them, or whatever it is they might be needing. But if you serve them, if you offer them valuable services, that will reflect on you as well, depending on what you do, of course. But very often, if you can serve them, that serves you, especially in the longer term. And you will need to survive the short term to be in the long term.
So that emphasizes, again, a lot of the things we've talked about in the past: empathy, which is understanding their needs, and then using creativity and imagination to come up with ideas that you can help them based on what you've sensed from your empathy. So it's really intensifying the role of the entrepreneur here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, now that we've talked about both upstream and downstream and so forth, it definitely wouldn't hurt to call your banker and other such businesses that are sort of supporting the whole supply chain, and asking them, maybe they can get you out of a contract, or maybe they can offer a lower interest rate and so forth. I mean, everybody knows that we're in a crisis situation, and no one really knows what is going to be the outcome of it, or how it is going to affect your business or your industry and whatnot else. Which means this might be the time to make offers, and also to make it easier for you to go forward.
Yeah, and you talked about exercising entrepreneurial judgment there. I'll read you a text which arrived on my phone just before you and I started this conversation, unsolicited. I don't know who it's from. It says, "Hello, Hunter Hastings. Do you need extra working capital for your business or an SBA loan to prepare for possible slow times coming up?" So my entrepreneurial judgment says to be suspicious of that. But maybe it also says, boy, there's going to be some supply out there of cash or credit. How should I sort through those kinds of things? I know I've got to be careful, but on the other hand, that's a useful extension. So how would you guide my judgment there?
Well, I mean, I think your judgment is sound with respect to that email. Maybe that's not the way to go. And the same thing, if there is a prince in Nigeria or something offering you $1 billion, might also not be the way to go. But there's a reason they're sending out these emails now. This is a don't trust the email, but the reason it's being sent is that people are looking for this and people will need capital and they will need liquidity and so forth. So it's actually a pretty good signal that maybe you should not respond to the email, but contact your banker or whatever financial institution that you have been working with, and contact another one too and see what are they doing, what can they offer at this time, and what temporary discounts or lower interest rates or whatever can they offer to help you stay afloat, because they want to keep their customers too, or they want to gain new customers, right? So this is definitely a time to take advantage of this and also help all the stakeholders in your business, by which I mean the suppliers and the customers and the owners and your employees and whoever else has anything to do with your business.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. There's a supply of cash and credit out there. You might want to sort through it using a search for the best terms. But also the entrepreneur has some leverage here, that if they become a customer of the bank for this extended credit, there's a relationship benefit there too. So you can create some leverage in this situation, perhaps.
Absolutely. I mean, as they say in politics, you should never let a good crisis go to waste. And in a sense, they're right, because if something happens and it's a dramatic change like this one, it means that everybody's open for renegotiating and they're open for figuring out how to move forward. And no one is really going to hold you to long-term contracts, because everybody realizes that this might mean that they don't get anything out of it instead of something. So this is the time to renegotiate, but not necessarily be greedy sort of make your suppliers suffer, but instead to collaborate with them and find out the best collaborative, cooperative solution that you can figure out.
There's also, we must recognize, some expanded market opportunities here. Not all markets are contracting. So if your restaurant customer is losing diners, you might find a way to directly deliver to consumers at home, because there's going to be more of that going on. I read about a yoga class company that is expanding to give classes online because the in-person classes are declining. Hospitals need more cleaning services. Some businesses are looking to borrow workers, like my local grocery store had a big hiring sign because the stores were packed and they needed more tellers and shelf stockers and so on like that. So there are always markets that are growing. It's not all markets that are declining. And maybe the alert entrepreneur can discover those, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are plenty of examples of this too. And we've already seen a minor revolution in terms of home deliveries of everything, basically, from fresh produce to freshly made meals to packaged cans of goods and so forth. But there's a lot of more deliveries going on right now than used to be the case. And I think we're going to see more remote work in the future as well. People have sort of been focusing on the office as a meeting place and maybe a way of sharing information and so forth. So for probably traditionalist reasons, more than economic reasons. And of course, it's easier face-to-face than it might be over through a screen and so forth. I think this, with a virus and everything, contagion, this will make this process go a whole lot faster and people will take leaps forward so that they can sit at home and work and so forth. We're already seeing a lot of innovation. I got an email just a couple of days ago from a local restaurant company here in Tulsa, where I live, where they have at least two restaurants, sort of high-quality, upper-end restaurants. And they were immediately starting with curbside delivery. So they might not have delivery to your home, mm-hmm. but if you don't want to enter the restaurant and risk getting in touch with someone who might be carrying the virus without knowing it, you can stay in your car outside and they will walk out with the food to you, which is, it's not really a fantastic innovation, but it didn't exist before. And now it's there because people want it. It's again, what we've talked about and so many times, that you have to realize who your customer is and what your customer might value. And this might be exactly it, especially for people who already have some other condition. I mean, those who are in the high-risk groups, according to most of the experts, they might definitely not want to go to your restaurant mm-hmm. if you have a restaurant and mingle with people there and have people sneeze at them and whatnot. So they would definitely value being able to sit in the car and just get a bag of food through the window or maybe even in the trunk. And what you said before about there might be markets growing, and that's another thing. Maybe you should step a little more outside of your box than usual and not just add to the services that you're offering your customers, but also say, hey, my business has resources. My business has a skill set and expertise that is useful. The world is different. Mm-hmm. What can I do in the short term that would help society and help people or help some market segment with something that they're struggling with right now? What can I do? Can I do something completely different? Can I, instead of serving meals in my restaurant, can I have curbside delivery? Can I perhaps have delivery? Can I offer to produce meals for a hospital where a lot of people are at, and things like that? I mean, you can even go into a completely different industry if you have the resources and the know-how. Serving the community in a market-based manner means that you're better off too. You're serving them and thereby serving yourself, like we've said so many times.
Right. So new ways to facilitate value. I've been reading about physical event businesses getting into the virtual event industry. You got to imagine what that might be. But a webinar is kind of a virtual event. And I know, I think Apple is taking its developer conference all online as opposed to in person. So there's a growth business. And I'm not sure whether it's a business, but I read about a virtual happy hour. I think it was in Japan where people working from home for a company all got together on Zoom or whatever the equivalent was, poured themselves a beverage, clinked the computer screen, and enjoyed the social mingling of happy hour. So entrepreneurial imagination at work there, Per.
Absolutely. I mean, the opportunities are endless in a sense. Mm-hmm. And now that you mention Apple, I mean, I just saw the news that whoever has an Apple card will not have to pay their credit card bill for the month of March. And this one such small thing, like we talked about before, helping your customers with financing and whatnot, that is not typically what you do, but something extraordinary to increase the value they get from your products. And I'm sure other companies do this as well. It was just one example that I happened to see. But all of those things, if you can afford it, you might get plenty of rewards from this too.
Let's put a tentative toe in the political water here, Per. You said that entrepreneurs are going to use their imagination here. They're going to be creative. They may have to cut down on expenses, obviously. But don't look for political favors, because they're going to tend to destroy the market rather than strengthen the market. So tell us what you have in mind there.
Well, political entrepreneurship, as they call it, is it's a dangerous game to play, because as soon as in any market or industry, when some players start playing the political game, whether that is lobbying or campaign contributions or just pushing for protective legislation or whatever it is, that opens a sort of Pandora's box for all your competitors to do the same. And then competition will move from offering valuable services to your customers to stopping others from getting these favors, or making sure that you get the favors first. And that's a destructive game to begin with. So your role as an entrepreneur is suddenly very different. You're no longer facilitating value for people, but you are destroying your own and others' capabilities to do so, which is it's a different kind of game completely, and it's not really entrepreneurship, I would say, at all. And it's dangerous also because what you're doing is playing a game where you are separating yourself and the industry from what matters and the information that is out there. You have, when you are acting in the market, you have a direct channel of communication with your customers, and you get immediate feedback if you're doing something right or something wrong. And if you do something right and earn a profit, and we talked about this before with the ethic of entrepreneurship, then you get rewarded with a profit because your consumers profit even more. They are satisfied to a much greater extent, and thereby you can get a profit. As soon as you start playing the political game, prices are no longer competitively determined. And you might get into a monopoly situation where you rather can exploit consumers than offering them value. So it's a very different game. And what it means ultimately, maybe not for you as an individual entrepreneur right now, but for the industry overall and maybe even the whole economy, is that all those scarce resources that we have, all the supplies that you use in your business, they're really allocated to not as valuable ends, because we lose the information of what consumers actually would want you to use these things for, which is where the profit is at.
How should entrepreneurs think about the government interventions that are being floated and executed right now, such as encouraging banks to extend loans or forgive payment misses for some loans for entrepreneurs, which sounds like a good thing. Enforcing sick leave in new ways, which could sound like a burden to entrepreneurs. How should they think about this new interventionist environment around them?
Well, I mean, the first is to have a contingency plan and think about how can this possibly affect you and your stakeholders. I would say this might sound a little drastic, but if what is the ideas that are being floated are such ideas that means that you will probably not be able to run your business, maybe you should simply get out before there's too much suffering. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sucks to recommend to entrepreneurs to stop being entrepreneurs, but for some industries, that might actually be the better course of action. I would be a little wary to think that politicians and the state will somehow save you, because they don't have nearly the information that you do about what it is you're doing and how you could be doing it and how you serve your consumers and your customers. So, and whatever it is they enact in order to help entrepreneurs and sort of help with liquidity and whatnot else. Very often, these things come back to haunt you later on. So if you actively seek these measures, whatever those are, and take advantage of them, it might very well be the case that you will need to pay them back at some point in time where you definitely had not expected. So, I mean, if you can, if you can continue doing business, thinking of the supply chain and your consumers first, then I would do that and stay away from everything else. I mean, taking advantage of what is offered, no strings attached. That's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And in terms to run your business, that might be a good thing, but you should also be a little wary that those no strings attached could very well turn into strings attached after the fact.
Okay, so let's see if we can wrap up in terms of the entrepreneur's agility and adaptability. This seems like a situation where it's a good place to exercise those attributes, but as you said, the situation could be very constrained. There are lots of events and circumstances that might be out of the entrepreneur's control, but we do want to encourage entrepreneurs to unlock the power of agility and adaptability. We've talked about gathering information, exercising creativity, exercising imagination, using empathy, which is a great entrepreneurial skill. How might I challenge you to sum all this up in language of opportunity, Per?
Well, I mean, agility is pretty much the core of what we've been talking about. I mean, any long-term contracts that you have, any contractual terms that might no longer fit the situation we're in and so forth, they can be and probably should be renegotiated now when everybody realizes that this might not work out. So, I mean, acting now to create a more agile situation where you have more space to move in a sense and where you can adjust your business in a much greater extent, this is the time to do that, right? And it's very often better to act and meet the future than it is to just sit and wait for it. And of course, entrepreneurs should know this. And as we've talked about before, that entrepreneurs, they are really in the business of creating the future for the rest of us. And for an entrepreneur then to sit and wait and sort of tied into these contracts and relationships that they have without trying to change them for a better situation, it seems a little very strange to me. It reminds me of the Sequoia Capital, the venture capitalist firm. They said something about how they have experienced downturns for 5 decades or so. And they learned that making fast decisions is never a bad thing. And I think as long as you have thought through those decisions and do not just act out of panic, it is a good thing. And whenever there is a crisis or the world changes, you should adapt to that change and think about what future this might lead to and what future you can create out of it. And I mean, that's the core of agility. That's being guided by consumer value, as we've talked about a number of times. And that's the role of the entrepreneur. And so that's what the entrepreneur should do today too. And I know there are plenty of problems that entrepreneurs need to deal with at the moment and lots of details and specific issues that are really calling for their attention. But this is the time to also think about the future, not necessarily 10 years from now, but think about how do you weather this storm? And what do you need to change in your business and in the supply chain overall and in your relationship with the rest of the market? And then go ahead and try to do that.
Yep. Yeah, so another way to look at agility and adaptability is constant change. And there are two ways to look at that. Change is hard, but on the other hand, change is what entrepreneurs do and they can benefit from it. The other aspect, Per, that I always look at in these situations is to think of entrepreneurship as a community of entrepreneurs. There are people out there to help and give advice, have had experience in the past. The Sequoia Capital email or letter, I think, is quite a good example of that. They say, hey, we've been around for a long time. We've seen this before. And here's what you do. And as you said, they urge fast decisions, and no one ever regrets making those changes. So I would just leave it also as saying, tap into your community of entrepreneurs, other people who can help participate and collaborate with you. So there's always help out there.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Good. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up there. Per, thank you for making this contribution. You made it much more broadly at entrepreneur.com, and now you've made it at Economics for Entrepreneurs. And I understand that there are media interviews in your future, because other people are tapping your expertise too. So thank you for making us one of your channels.
Absolutely. Thank you, Hunter.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.